This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, going live to the nation's capital from his office in Washington, D.C., 2nd District Republican Congressman Cliff Bentz. Congressman, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle. It's great to be with you.
Now, as we have been mentioning, it's a bit of a shift from the prior years when I've had this job for quite some time, because Douglas County was practically totally represented in the 4th District after the census in 2020 and the redistricting process. Now it's right around, I think, half of the county geographically is in the 2nd District, and so some additional ground, literally, for you to cover. And I know that's been probably an adjustment with more communities to interact with.
That's absolutely correct, and I couldn't be happier to have part of Douglas County in my district. The boundary is still a little unclear to me, but I think it's just south of Roseburg, and the boundary line running east and west, and it's a little unclear yet. But I hope to be out there more this year, and to get to know exactly where that boundary is. But I want to reemphasize, I'm very, very, very happy to have a part of Douglas County in my district.
And just to give folks some background, tell folks where you are from and also your background in the legislature.
Right. Well, my family came to Oregon back in the very early, actually, it was sometime around 1916, and had cattle ranches, still does. My brother still have cattle ranches over in the far eastern part of the state, southeastern corner. I was raised on a cattle ranch, and then I went to Eastern Oregon State College, and then on to law school, and then back to practice law in Little Ontario for 20, 30 years, and then into the Oregon legislature for 12 years. And then now this is my third year here in Congress. When Greg Walden decided to retire, I decided to run for the job, and very, very happy to have been elected by the folks of the 2nd District in Oregon, which, by the way, with the addition of part of Douglas County and all of Josephine County, is now about just a little bit less than three quarters of the entire state of Oregon.
Wow, that is a big area geographically. I'm curious, obviously, when Congressman Walden decided to retire, the opportunity was there, but not everybody that is a lawmaker in Oregon, I've talked to several over the past few years that had the potential for running for various positions in Congress and decided they'd rather stay in Oregon. I'm curious about what led you to shift this direction.
Yes, well, since I was a little kid, wanted to be in Congress, and that's because growing up on a cattle ranch that had a large BLM grazing permit, we were involved with the federal government every day, it seemed. And then most of my district, by the way, three quarters of Oregon, a huge percentage is owned by the federal government. And so it seemed to me that if I wanted to make a difference when it came to affecting people's ability to use those federal lands, whether it's timber or whether it's sagebrush, you had to be here in Washington, D.C. So Greg Walden was doing a wonderful job. And really, we've never, in my opinion, had a better congressman than Greg Walden. And I mean it. He's very, very, very accomplished. And so there was no reason to try to run against him. He's too good at what he does. But when he decided to step down, that gave me the opportunity to step up and try to put to use all my experience in this, in both growing up and representing many, many clients across Eastern Oregon. And I was just very happy to have this opportunity to come back here and try to help.
And you got to do that in the midst of a pandemic. What was that like?
Well, it was an empty town when we arrived 2 years and 4 months ago. And it was empty because the town had shut down. And so you had to actually look around to find a grocery store or someplace to buy anything to eat. I think the hotel we stayed in, the Hyatt, and I think it was $80 a night. I mean, they were happy to have us. And the the situation, of course, was masks all the time. And that was awkward and seemed ridiculous as time passed and the situation became more understood. But the good news is that's over and it's all back to normal here. And I'm just amazed sometimes at the number of people that are actually in this town because they've all come back plus a few more, I think.
You know, it's interesting. I chuckle when you said a Hyatt for $80 a night. I've paid for motels around Washington, D.C., and that's like the ultimate bargain rate I've ever heard of.
Well, I'll just tell you, I think they were very happy to have us. We were here in the very worst part of that crazy situation before there was anybody that truly understood it. And we were, I think, the only people in the hotel, and I mean it. It was really something.
Wow. So let's take a look at this year. What is your initial thoughts about this session of Congress so far in 2023?
Well, I was just pretty discouraged by the fact that we Republicans only took the majority by five seats, and we can only afford to lose four votes if we're going to move any sort of legislation across the floor. So that was sad, and then to lose the Senate was even more sad because it meant that much of the stuff that we moved wasn't going to go very far. And so that was probably the most discouraging thing as we came into this year. On the other hand, in all the years I'd been in Salem, 12 years, 10 in the House, 2 in the Senate, I had never been in the majority. And so I'm very happy to be in the majority. And I was asked a year or so ago by the chair of natural resources. I'm on natural resources and I'm on judiciary. But I was asked by Bruce Westerman if I wanted to be chair of the subcommittee on water, wildlife and fisheries. And I said, yes, I sure do. And so now I am a chair, and that's slightly unusual for a sophomore to have that position. And so during the past 6 months or so, I've been looking into what we can do using that chairmanship to its best advantage. That's what I've been focusing upon.
Well, and obviously a big deal in part of your district, especially around Klamath County.
Oh, it's huge, and it's huge. People tend to forget because suddenly we have some snow and some rain that we're not in a drought. We're still in a drought, and in fact, the entire Western United States, about 72 million people are still close to not having enough water. And thank goodness for this year, thank goodness for the snow and the rain that we've received, but it's. It's adequate for this year and perhaps a little bit of next, but in the long run, we have to do a much, much, much better job storing our water and getting our forests back into shape so they do a better job. I think the biggest sponge that we have is our forests, and if we can get them back into shape, then they'll do a lot better job of storing and releasing water for us.
What do you think your biggest challenge is chairing natural resources?
You know, the biggest challenge is the Democrats having learned how to use the haystack of administrative rules that to hire lawyers, and lawyers delve through those rules and then file lawsuits and stop anything from happening. And that's one of the reasons our forests are in such deplorable shape. And the biggest challenge is how in the world do we appropriately convince the people of the United States that these kinds of approaches to managing our 95 million acres of forests up and down the West Coast are incorrect and wrong and going to have us all burned up. And so the biggest challenge is to overcome the huge group of lawyers and other organizations that are using those regulations against us.
And, you know, you talk about the rain this past year. People around here are happy to see nearly 90-degree temperatures by Friday, at least for a couple of days. But we're reminded that fire season is not that far away now that here we are in late April. And while there's been a lot of extra precipitation, things can dry up very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely right. And in many of my visits to your part of the state, whether it was down in Grants Pass or down in and around Medford and all of the communities in that area or back up to where the Bootleg Fire was up toward Bend and up into the Blue Mountains. Yeah, all of those places are going to be, again, of course, susceptible to fire and to destruction that goes with it. And so what we've been doing back here, and I'm so happy that Bruce Westerman, the chair of natural resources, is not only an engineer, but a forester, and a really good one. And he and I have been working together along with other members of the Natural Resource Committee and Subcommittee to try to figure out a better way of addressing forest fire. And we have one of the best guys we could possibly have in that space in the form of Bruce Westerman, and we'll be passing legislation that addresses how to get back into the woods and reduce the fuel loads that are there.
Now, along with water and other natural resources, what are some of the other issues you're most focused on in this session?
Well, I'm also on the Judiciary Committee. We just got back from New York. Jim Jordan, our leader, decided that it'd be a good idea to focus on crime in New York, on the failure of the district attorney there, Mr. Bragg, to focus on crime. And it was a terrifically interesting hearing. Never seen so many television cameras in my life, or for that matter, just people taking pictures in general. It was amazing, and the protesters outside in the hallway. It was quite the exercise. But the idea is to bring attention to this kind of we don't care about crime attitude that many Democrat district attorneys reflect, and you can see what happens. You see, like Walmart moving out of Portland, for example, or Target moving out of San Francisco, or people not paying attention, not caring apparently about private property and shoplifting and throwing bricks through windows. I mean, and then not being prosecuted for it or stealing cars. And so we are focusing in significant part on that and trying to say, hey, these things need to change. And of course, immigration is a huge issue in Judiciary. We just passed 8 bills to try to secure the border out of the committee on a 15-hour hearing, by the way, Kyle. It started at 10 in the morning, and we ended up around 2 in the following morning. And those kinds of issues are hugely important, and I think they get decent attention in that committee.
Now, just a logistical note, because I'm kind of a geeky nerd logistical person. If your hearing ran that long, do you guys have breaks during that? How does that work?
Well, you have some breaks because you have to go over and vote. And so what will happen is they'll call the vote while you're in committee, and then the chair will wind the committee down, and then you'll walk over to the Capitol to vote and then walk back. And then you'll during those hearings will keep on going, and they'll bring in a sandwich or something for you to eat in the back room. So people will take turns and leave the hearing room for those kinds of breaks. But no, the hearing generally keeps right on going. And it's there's a lot of members of the committee. Each one gets 5 minutes. And I want to say there's 25 of we Republicans and slightly less Democrats, maybe 20. And so take that number, 45 times 5 minutes, and you can see immediately how long these hearings can take, particularly if you bring amendments, which I think the Democrats brought 25 or 27 amendments. And so each person gets 5 minutes on each amendment. So you can kind of see why they take so long.
Now, do people keep their attention during that period of time? I mean, it's one thing to put in a long day, but to be in essentially one meeting for 15 hours, is that effective?
Well, I'll just say that 2 years ago, about this time, we had a 26-hour hearing. We did take a 4-hour break after 20 hours and then came back for 6 more hours. So this was those were the 6 bills to break up big tech. And so but to answer your question, these issues are terrifically important, and the type of amendments that are brought generally are interesting amendments and generally will prompt your attention. And not every person speaks on every amendment. And then we have some extraordinarily articulate people in the Judiciary Committee. So much of the time that which they're saying is really worth listening to. And so, it can get kind of slow and you kind of wish you had more coffee to drink. But the truth of it is it's very interesting to me, and I think interesting to most people on the committee. So we don't have too many people going to sleep during the meetings. It happens, but not often.
We have this looming debt limit situation coming up, and it seems to be getting more intense as the calendar advances closer to it. What's your perspective on what should be done and how both sides should work this out?
Well, it's certainly going to be an enormous test for we Republicans. I have here in front of me on my desk, and I spent the weekend going over it, it looks like it's about 3 inches thick. I think it's probably closer to 2.5. It's the 320-page debt ceiling bill that we Republicans are going to be discussing between now and Wednesday, when I believe we will vote on it. And that debt ceiling bill sets forth a series of provisions that we're asking that the Senate agree to as conditions of increasing the debt limit. And then the debt limit at the end of the bill is increased by $1.5 trillion, which would take us around until about March, April, May of June of next year. Everybody knows, by the way, that we're spending too much money. But the Democrats, I'll tell you right now, they don't think, apparently, that we're spending enough, because their budget suggests trillions in new taxes and more spending. And I'll tell you, Kyle, it's very hard once people get used to having free stuff to go to them and tell them we have to stop. It's like Santa Claus coming in and picking up all the presents under the tree and saying, oh, I'm sorry, we're going to take these away now. But somebody's going to have to do the tough things of saying we can't keep spending as much money. And when we get to the debt ceiling, as we now are approaching it, this is a really good time to remind everybody that this cannot go on. We've got to slow this spending train down. Now, the debt ceiling is money that's already been spent. The money that is going to add up to and require the increase in the debt ceiling is money already spent. And so we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. The question is going to be, how do we go about doing it, and what can we accomplish when it comes to slowing down the spending?
Do you feel like possibly, and obviously you came in partway through this, but do you feel like possibly the pandemic spending bills that were meant to kind of, you know, keep things going during that time have created some things that are, you know, were meant to be short term, but now people are hoping they stay long term?
By design. Honestly, the Democrats, I believe, absolutely planned on making some of the things that happened during the COVID crisis permanent. And that's the expansion of Obamacare, for example, the expansion perhaps of Medicaid, the expansion perhaps of the child care tax credit. And some of, by the way, the child care tax credit and certain other tax credits have a very useful and valuable purpose. But each one of them has to be approached, each one of these expenditures has to be approached with an eye toward how we're going to pay for them. And right now, we have about $4.9 trillion coming in the door, and we have about 27 cents on top of each of those dollars going out the door. And you can't do that. It won't work. And we have to be careful, or one of these days people are going to say, you know, we just don't think you're going to pay us back. And they'll quit lending us money, and you will see interest rates literally go through the roof. And an economic crisis like we've not ever seen before. We don't want that to happen. And so the challenge is, how do we take these programs that the Democrats want to go on forever and get bigger and bigger and bigger? How do we slow this down?
And from my understanding of economics, probably neither side wants the federal government to get to a default situation either.
We do not. Once you fail to pay your debts, then people become reluctant to loan you money. And we are a nation that is in a situation where borrowing is still a requirement. There are many things that we are doing that require more money than's coming in the door, and they're hard to slow down and change. And we've made promises that we must keep in the form of Medicare and Social Security, and these kinds of programs need to be protected. And that means that we've got to figure out a way of addressing this issue so it doesn't damage people, but at the same time, it takes into account our ability to raise the money and pay. But you're right, a default would not be good for this country. It would be bad. And anybody that suggests otherwise has not spent any time studying how much money we need to borrow. Because if you default, then people, they're just not going to be willing to loan you money. There's not. And so doing that kind of damage to our ability to borrow is not something that we want to do. I will tell you I can't tell you that there's unanimity on this point in our Republican caucus. I think there are some people who aren't as fearful of a shutdown as I am. But it's my hope that we'll be able to work this out with the Biden administration and with the Senate and get the debt ceiling raised, but at the same time begin to slow the spending down.
Now, for residents of Douglas County that are now part of the 2nd District and beginning this new relationship with your office, how do they get connected to your staff or maybe questions they have or issues they have with federal programs, et cetera?
Right. Well, first of all, we encourage them to reach out to our office on any issue that involves the federal government. The office, the Medford office number is 541-776-4646. That's 541-776-4646. Joey Miner and Windus James are in that office full time, along with some others, and are there to help. And I have the greatest team, and they will help any way they can if the issue is federal. And then our office number here in D.C. is 202-225-6730. That's 202-225-6730. And you can also Google Cliff Bentz, as a congressman here in D.C., and those numbers are there. So please reach out if you're having a federal issue, whether it's immigration or Social Security or veterans. Please reach out. We'll help.
All right, Congressman Cliff Bentz on Inside Douglas County, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle. Look forward to joining you again. Thanks.
1256 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.